Well, it's good to be here again. It's kind of like coming home in many ways, though there are some of you that I do not know as well as others, and some of you, quite confessedly, I don't know at all. And that's not because I have anything against you, it's just, I guess I haven't been introduced to you. I'm always just a little resistant to do this type of thing. For fear that it looks like it's more than what it really is. And I think that's always a danger when you just pick out, okay, this is one ministry and I'm going to tell you in a half hour what we've been doing over the last year. And my fear is that sometimes it can look like it's much more than it really is. So please, my wife says when I talk about price of something, I say it'll probably cost this. She says you ought to multiply by at least two because I'm kind of out of touch with prices, particularly with food. But when I am talking about these things, you may want to divide by two so that it doesn't seem to be greater than it really is. And I don't want it to be like that. And I certainly don't want anybody to think that this ministry is head and shoulders above everything else, because it's not. It's just one way that God has opened up for an old farmer to have a ministry in different places in the world, and particularly with the academy. Primarily, it did start in Eastern Europe, and now it has moved from Eastern Europe to Southeast Asia to Western Europe and also Africa, where we have these opportunities. So what I will do tonight is simply kind of work you through, or walk you through, no work involved, walk you through by slides, and I'll just give a word about what we've been doing over this last year. Before that, I will tell you that what is upcoming, my next big trip, I guess, is I will be in Jordan for a week teaching, but there I'm going to be teaching missionaries. So I don't just go and do work in the academy with unbelievers. We're also engaged in training missionaries, but not only that, we are engaged in training particularly Christian leaders in all of Europe, East, West, and Central Europe. So this year I'll spend a week or so in Jordan, and there I'll be teaching missionaries who will come together in Amman. After that, I have a week back in Romania at the Craiova University. There's where I'm engaging the academy, students, professors who do not know Christ, and many of them don't even believe in God. It's probably 90% of everybody in that school of 32,000 is probably either atheist or at least non-believers. After that, I'm supposed to spend a week in Nigeria, up in Jos. There I will speak for a week, a lecture at a seminary. But while I'm doing that, I also meet with the local university, and I lecture at the university. So in the mornings, I speak all morning at the seminary, and then in the afternoons, I go over to the university and engage professors and students. And most of those are Muslims. So we have, I'll say something about what we did this year there. Then in May, the end of May, I'll spend a week in Europe, in Hungary, and there I'll be working with leaders from all over Europe, Christian leaders, in helping them and training them in the matter of Christian apologetics. And then 2 weeks in Vienna. Now, this gets really rough, you know. I'm in Austria. In Vienna for 2 weeks, and there I'm training Christian pastors for the former Soviet Union. I will leave there. I've just received an invitation today to go to Oxford and to be a part of a C.S. Lewis conference. I don't know if I'm going to do that or not. I don't know if that works in. Because the 1st of July, I have to be in Cambridge, and there I'll be lecturing and working in Cambridge with PhDs from around Europe, about 25 of them, and they're brought to Cambridge under the Wilberforce Institute, And there, we're trying to help these people integrate their Christian faith with their particular profession. Some will be doctors, some will be scientists, some will be in literature, and they're Christians, but they've never really had any instruction on how does the Christian faith apply to that particular discipline. And we spend a week there. We leave there and then spend 2 weeks in Switzerland, and there we are training people in worldview. And these people come from all over the world. They meet in Villa, Switzerland, and I'm there for 2 weeks teaching them. So that's a little bit about what we will be doing. Then in October, I will be going to Ukraine, down in the Simferopol area, that's down the Crimean Peninsula, and there I will lecture in universities and also speak at an international conference where most of those present are either atheists or unbelievers. They are either graduate students or they're professors at some of the major universities all over the former Soviet Union. And I haven't really planned my life beyond October. So something else might pop up, but I'm not sure. I'm going to go through this, and certainly at the end we'll have time if you wish to ask questions. Let me begin where we started this year, that would have been 08. I was in Chiang Mai, Thailand, for a week, and there I was teaching, training. These are all missionaries to that particular area, young men and women who are training for mission work. And at our seminary, we have what is called a 2+2 or a 2+3 program. And they come to seminary for 2 years. Then after that, they go to the mission field. And while they're in the mission field, the seminary sends teachers to certain locations. They all come in, and that's how they finish their education. So they're actually on the mission field, learning the language, things of that nature. And they're also getting their theological training. So at the end of 4 years, they can actually graduate with an MDiv. It usually takes 3 years, but if they do it this way, it takes 4, and for some people, it takes 5. But that's okay. This is up in Chiang Mai. This is a great Buddhist temple. There is just billions of dollars in gold in this temple, this Buddhist temple. It's a well-known Buddhist temple, but it's also a monastery, so there are a lot of monks there. You begin to see all the gold that's in there and people coming in. There's a Buddha right there. It's kind of overpowering in a sense. Here's a monk. Here are children bowing down to something that's here. Whatever, I'm not really sure what it is. But these people, much of Thailand is Buddhist in its orientation as far as religion is concerned. However, there is a strong Christian presence in Thailand. That's actually why we always go to Chiang Mai, because there's such a strong Christian presence. But still, there's a very strong Buddhist, because most of the people there would be of the Buddhist. Nancy was with me. We left Chiang Mai, and then we flew down to Penang, Malaysia. By way of Bangkok, which is the worst possible way to get there, I think. And these are young men who are studying to be pastors, and some of them, though you may not be able to tell, some of them are Chinese. As a matter of fact, many of them are Chinese, and they have all intents to go back into mainland China and pastor churches, knowing that many of them, or at least some of them, may very well lose their lives. But they're down here training, and I was there at Malaysia Baptist Theological Seminary. I'm an adjunct professor there, and I go sometimes once a year or every other year to help train these young people. Many of them, as I said, are Chinese and plan to go back to China to be pastors, and there's a great need. There are many believers in China, many believers, but there are not a lot of trained pastors. And we know if we do not train the churches with trained pastors, what happens to Christianity? Well, you end up going back and evangelizing the younger generation all over again. And we believe we ought to try to stop that and if we possibly can, and send people in there. The seminary where I'm at, we also go into China and teach these pastors there, but it's much more difficult. That is, you cannot take any notes with you. You come in, you may have to go through 4, 5, 6, or 7 taxi drivers. They're trying not to alert the authorities. They were going to meet with Christians, and then we meet in a undisclosed place and teach them from memory. That's how they have to learn it. That's how we have to teach it. I have not gone. I'm on the slate to go there. Then from there I went to Lviv, and that not immediately. I did come home, and I think I was in Lviv, Ukraine, and here I'm at the Ukrainian Baptist Seminary, and this is a unique seminary in that all training is in Ukrainian, not Russian. And that's interesting because of the big battle now going on in Ukraine. You've probably heard about some of that political issues, but there's a great move within people in Kiev and East to bring Ukraine back under the authority of Russia. And yet from the Dnipro River over west, they are strenuously fighting that. And you may know that they have actually been invited into the United Nations, EU, and so Ukraine is really trying to make a move to the West, and they see if we continue to speak the Russian language, that connects us to Russia. So they really want everybody to have to learn Ukrainian, and that's not going well. So when you have a seminary that's strictly all in Ukrainian, that's to train pastors who can go into these churches, particularly in Western Ukraine, and pastor them, not in Russian. It's almost offensive to speak Russian in Western Ukraine. I was talking with the rector of this Baptist seminary, and I just happened to use some Russian words, and he reminded me very kindly, we're not Russian here, we're Ukrainian. It runs very deeply, folks. So I was here in early April, I think, or maybe late March. I spent a week here teaching these people. And this is just it's looking from the seminary out. It's high on a hill, looking out over this small city. It's outside. It's not in Lviv. It's really east of Lviv. I then left there, and I think I came home for a week. And then I had a week, and I was in Nigeria. Now, the only time I travel like this is when we have breaks at school. So we have 2 breaks fall, 2 breaks spring. So we have a spring break, that makes sense, in the spring, and we have Easter. So I always travel on when we have Easter break. I'm not home for Easter. We travel because that's the one time that we can travel and I'm not missing classes. I am granted 1 week besides that that I can travel if I have somebody to cover my classes. But I try not to do that. I feel an obligation to the students. Not that somebody else couldn't do it, but it's just kind of my own commitment that I have. Here I am at the home of a Nigerian. I'm down in Abuja, where I met this man. He's a doctor and runs a large government agency. I forget how many people he says he has under him, 40 or 50 people under him. And he's a very strong Christian. And there is a strong Christian influence in southern Nigeria. That's down in the Abuja area. But as you go a little further north, that is not so strongly Christian. Matter of fact, I was right on the edge of where it becomes Muslim territory in Nigeria. And these are just some pictures of the seminary. I spoke for a week at the seminary. It's called the Josh Evangelical Theological Seminary. A very solid evangelical school training pastors for all of Africa. well, there I am. Yes, I am. And here are just some of the dorms. It's one of the finest seminaries that I have seen in a third world country. They have done an extremely good job. All of their professors have earned PhDs from either Europe or the United States, and they're all thoroughly evangelical. So I really enjoy working. They have about 500 students in the seminary, So it's a relatively large group. Here I am meeting with the, here's the president of the seminary, and we're just sitting around. We're drinking soft drinks, folks. This is the young man here. His name is Clement, and I met Clement when I was in Switzerland doing a worldview school, and he said, would you please think about coming to Nigeria? Because that's where he's from. And I said, well, I would think about it, but I won't come unless I can speak in the universities as well as speak in the seminary. So he arranged that when I arrived there, I had the opportunity not just simply to speak in the seminary, but also go to the university. Here I am at the seminary, as you can see. It's a rather large chapel. You've seen about a little over a half of the student body. I would say there were at least 200, 300 of these young men and women present for every lecture. I have never seen, now some of you have been to Africa, you know what I'm talking about. I've never seen such poverty in my life. Never. And I have been in Palestine. I think the only thing that trumps it would be a refugee camp that I was in Palestine. But you would drive down the road and come to a stop sign, and there would be, or stoplight, and there would be children begging for food. I remember one image now that's in my mind that won't release itself, and it's of a little girl that maybe she was 10 years old. Her legs were all crippled up behind her. Her arms were all deformed, and she was literally on her belly moving forward like a snake. And there at that stoplight begging for something. People selling sunglasses, which I don't know where they got them. I didn't want to ask. I didn't need a pair, so I didn't buy any. But you just, the poverty is so high there. And you wonder, how do you work effectively in this area for the gospel of Christ? And yet, many are doing it. When I was down in Abuja, and I went to church one morning, as I said, a strong Christian presence down there. The government gives the churches, I think they had about 20 acres, 30 acres. And every church just gets a piece on this big plot. So when you go to church, and there are no windows. I mean, there are windows, but there's no glass in them. They're just openings. So you can hear probably four or five sermons going on at one time. And some of them use loudspeakers. And there's a Pentecostal church that's having a good time. And there's a Baptist church and several different Baptist churches. And there were over 1,000 people in the church that I was attending. Over 1,000 people. And they came in, and I never saw anything like it. They just marched in. There was an usher there. And every row was filled up to capacity. Nobody sat in the back. You started from the front and worked back. And they were let out the same way. And that was just the first service. Then there was a second service. Cars everywhere. And I was very impressed with the preaching that was done that day. But again, poverty is just amazing. This is just some of the African landscape. I take pictures of that because, well, I hadn't been to Africa before, so I'm not on a safari. From there, I will just say, I don't have slides of this. Then after that, I went in May, the end of May, I was in Europe at Hungary, and there we meet with about 350 people from all over Europe, and some even from Australia, where these are Christian leaders. They are living in situations where they've never really had any training. I sometimes travel to places like Slovenia and Bulgaria. And some of these places was a handful of Christians. They are in the strong minority. They have never had virtually any training. There's almost nothing written in their own language. So unless they can read English, they get no theology books. They get no apologetic books. They get nothing like that. So I usually do this in May, the latter part of May. I was there meeting for a week with those individuals, and along many others, of course, that are doing that. You might recognize some of the other names. Ravi Zacharias has been there. I work with Ravi Zacharias' people. I've taught for them at Nyack College. People like John Lennox, D.A. Carson, a host of good theologians who come, and we're all engaged in workshops and things like that, helping these people network and to get some good training and good literature. Now, you must be able to speak English to come to this. And that's becoming easier simply because more and more of these former Soviet countries and other countries are making English, if not the first language, the second language that everybody is learning. Now, out of this came another ministry, and that is that I'm mentoring about 20 young people from all over Europe. I met with some of them when I was in Hungary. One is a Supreme Court justice on the Swiss Supreme Court. Another one is a physicist in a major university in Italy. Now, what happens is that once a month, they have assignments that they do, and once a month, we hook up via Internet. There's a program, I forget the title of it, but it enables me to communicate with them like we're all together. They can see me, I can see them. If I do a PowerPoint on my laptop, it shows up on their laptops. We can communicate. I have full control. I can say, now, wait a minute, let's just stop for a moment. I've got 10 minutes I want to lecture. After that, I will unmute you, and we can start asking questions. And it's just really amazing. We felt that one of the things when you do is not just go in on 1 month, 1 week out of the year and help these people, but to establish some kind of a long-term mentoring process that we maintain contact with them. And since I'm not up to flying over there every month, and they probably can't meet in one area anyway, using the Internet in this particular program, it's something like WebEx. It's a little more powerful than that. If those of you are familiar with Skype, it operates somewhat on that basis. Very effective. I left there, and then I took the summer off. I went back to Maine and tried to get prepared for what was coming in the fall. My last trip, I was in Craiova, Romania. And here I'm at a 14th century monastery, still active. It's now an abbey, and I had an opportunity to go through and to sit down. There was a young nun there. She wanted to tell me about the history, which is very interesting. And then she went up and fixed, there was about four of us in the group. She went and fixed us a nice afternoon tea with some kind of a cherry preserve. Everything is natural. And I was saying to her, asking her, is this a lifetime commitment? She said, it's a lifetime commitment. She was a beautiful young lady. Lifetime commitment to the church, to live there. And I thought to myself, a lifetime commitment. Never to get married, never to have a family, and never to live what we would consider to be a normal life. And I think, you know, we look at these, this is an Orthodox, I should have said. This is an Orthodox church, an Orthodox abbey. And I think what kind of commitment there is. So I said to her, what's your day like? And she was telling me how many times she would go to prayer and go down to the priest. There's one priest on site. And then she says, in the morning at 10 o'clock, we go to our priest to find out what is our worship. And I thought, what? And she said, because that is when our priest tells us what our task is for that day. In other words, we've always thought that this idea of work, of being worship, is a Protestant idea. These people hold on to that idea. She saw her work, whatever it was, we in the garden, dust in the furniture, she saw that as worship. I thought to myself, this is a beautiful setting, it's in the Carpathians, and I think to myself, you know, not for theological benefit, but I think I'd like to come here, maybe spend a month. It might be profitable. Here we are at this lovely little tea. Here's the lady. This is a professor from a university where I had just lectured at Tadja Jewel down in Romania. And he's the one. He's a law professor. They are the ones who honored me with a law degree, an honorary degree in law, for the work that I've been doing over the last 10 years in Eastern Europe. And this is a pastor up in Craiova, and this is my translator. And here I am as a picture with a lady. Here we are at a university. This is not a really good picture. Here I am lecturing. This was on a Saturday. Nobody had to come. They simply chose to come. And here I was lecturing on truth, morality, and reality, and centered primarily on what's the basis of law. And as I was discussing this and teaching this in a lecture of about 40, 50 minutes, and then a lot of questions after that, but in the lecture I mentioned that the importance of having something that stands over the judges, that is the concept of who judges the judges. And this is a very important point. And the professor who has invited me to Romania, to this university, he simply could not get that out of his head, how profound that was. And everywhere I went with him for that week, every time he got a chance to speak, he said, "But we must answer the question, who judges the judges?" And I'm glad that caught in his brain, because it is important. Here is just a handbill that says the University of Craiova. Why would it do that? The devil? Let me just see if this helps. I think it probably went into sleep mode. It's not supposed to do that, but it may have. Anyway, I'll get it up in time. Yes. That's not a good sound. What is interesting about this, several years ago, a friend, he's a pastor in Roanoke, was in Craiova working with some churches. And he just decided to go over to the university. And the first person he met in the university is this professor. Professor or Dr. Petrello. And he introduced himself, and as they got talking, Dr. Petrello said, "Would you come and lecture at my university?" Well, he said, "I'm not qualified, but I think I know some people who would be qualified." And so he contacted us and asked us, I don't know. I am technologically challenged. And I don't know why that's not working. Well, if it doesn't, it doesn't. I can survive. So one thing about technology, see, you've got to be able to know how to carry on without it. But it just doesn't, I don't understand why it is being so difficult. I think it's probably closing down now, and we'll get that taken care of. No, it's coming up. I don't know which direction it's going in. But I think it's positive. He has invited us. Now, Dr. Petrello is not a Christian. I think he's a theist, but he's not a Christian. But I'll tell you one thing. He hates the communist. So I think he's getting up in years. And I think he's having his parting shot at the communist by having me in and lecture. He said, "I want God brought back into this university." He said, "Would you be willing to work with us?" He is now, they are now working. We've signed a contract. The Southeastern has signed a contract with them. He is now working on getting the archives opened. And he is writing a book. It'll be two volumes. And I'm the editor on this side. It is going to be a book on the persecution of the Baptist in Romania under fascism and under communism. And because we signed on, he needs a little muscle. So Southern Baptist gave him the muscle he needed. And he put up his own personal money for this. He has now got special archives in Bucharest opened, and they are already studying them. He also has permission to access all of the military archives. Now, what is absolutely amazing to me, anyway, is that these people were so arrogant under fascism and communism, they recorded everything they did. Names, they were so proud of it. Now, they didn't just record it for one place. I'm told they made 3 copies, just in case somebody would get a hold of 1 copy and destroy it. Now, that is the height of arrogance in my thinking, but why would that not be working? I mean, I'm just looking at a blank. I'm looking at a completely blank screen. It's really kind of aggravating. That's probably putting it mildly. Maybe we should lay hands on it. Because it did come up. I've lived it.
We're just going down the sink, okay?
Huh?
Nothing to do with.
Oh, sure, it doesn't. You think you know what to do? Well, you're a computer man. Fix it. Fix it. Fix it. That's the right there's the on button. Just thought I would show you. I'm not challenging you. I just thought I'd show you, just so you didn't waste time. Because you know.
You get Brian up there with the elders up there.
Yeah, that's right. To lay hands on it.
Like oily oil.
No oil, please. Though I don't know it could get any worse than what it is. Let me just see. I'm sure that. Yeah. Anyway, then the first book will come that is just going to be the Baptists in Romania as a whole, and then the second book is going to be the Baptists as they were persecuted in the Transylvania area. Now, here's a man who's not a Christian, but he says that what happened to the Baptists... I didn't ask you to come here and break it. Susan, do you really have to put up with this? There we go. It looks like it does look promising.
That'll cost you.
I know. Okay. You just hit that, and then when it comes up, put in what you put there is a little B. Okay. Yeah. Will it be all right if I switch it over to my laptop?
Sure.
Maybe I better not. It scares me. This man is not a Christian. And I think it's so interesting that somebody would be like that and be very interested in doing something of that nature. Now, the university does not want me there. There's actually a seminary in the university, and the head of the seminary is the rector of the university, son-in-law. And the Orthodox do not want us there. And so Dr. Petroi is fighting against the establishment, and he tried to get the rector to come and talk with me, and the rector made up an excuse as to why he could not possibly do that. Things are looking better. What I find in this man is such an integrity. He said, now when we finish this book, we will not publish it until you and your people have put your eyes on it. Your name's going to be on it, and I don't want anything in the book that you don't approve or agree to. And he said, we have agreed that if there are, where there are names of people who may still be living, that those names will not be, they'll be blotted out in the documents. The book will have, all this is going to be a documents, and that each document will have a paragraph, and it will give you the context. This happened when, these were the people who were involved. Now here's the document that supports that. Okay, now I just need to go over here and do this, and then I'll just go down through it. Well, I'm blocking my... There's Dr. Petroi. When we were at the Abbey, they were praying, and he leaned over. He said, Professor, they're praying for Romania. They're praying for, he told me how many million people are in Romania. He said, they're praying for the sins of Romania. And then he said, oh my, something's got to change up here. And I said, that's right, Dr. Petroi. But something's got to change here as well. He said, yes. And I said, the only thing that will change that is Jesus Christ. And he did not recoil at that. He just said, yes. Now, whatever level he understands that. I'm not saying he trusted Christ. Don't misunderstand me. But the fact of the matter is that we are able to speak that openly with him. Here was a young man asking a question. Now, the first day I was there, there weren't a lot of students. And the reason is that the professors tried to tell him not to come or wouldn't announce that I was there. But the next day, the room was full, and we had a hard time accommodating everybody that came. And he's at the end. At the end of every lecture, he would stand up and just say rather embarrassing things about how this is why they all need to be there, because Dr. Little was here to tell them the truth, and they needed to know the truth. The next day, as I say, there were just a number of students who came. I lectured there on philosophy at the beginning of the 21st century. Now, you may think that's not that important, but it is a great opportunity to speak about theological issues and truth and all the rest of it. And I was able to do that at that. And then just marvelous questions from most of these people. The next day, I went to this building. I was invited by the government. And what I was to do this day is to lecture it's called the Day of Holocaust Remembrance. It's when they remembered the Holocaust. But anybody that has been persecuted was also invited to this meeting. And it's sponsored by the government. It's the high officials come. And I've been asked, as a Baptist, I had been asked to come because we had been persecuted. So I got to speak and address this group, and I addressed the issue about the Holocaust. I didn't talk about the Baptists, talk about the Holocaust. And I said, the Holocaust is the logical conclusion of atheism, and then made the case, because I believe it is. This is just an absolutely gorgeous building. I mean... it's really amazing. They brought in high school students, so it was a great opportunity, once again, for me to speak. Now, we're not deceitful here. Everybody knows who I am. I'm not the rector of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, though they did say I am. I don't know. I'm a director of something, but I'm not a rector of anything. But he introduces me without apology, without shame. This is a Baptist. And you have to know that in Romania, Baptists were just the scum of the earth. And they were thought to be ignorant, They had nothing to offer. We'd be better off without them. So when this man identifies with a Baptist, that is a major thing for him to do, particularly a Baptist like myself. And this gentleman here is the head of some big Jewish organization. And the press was there, so the next day I was in the press. No, I really wasn't in the press. I was, my picture and something about me was in the paper. I don't want to think I got in the press. And here we are, we're walking, I don't know, somewhere. And after every lecture, I was taken to what is called the University House. This place is absolutely unbelievable. I didn't know that Romanians had this kind of money. But cry over. This place, the behind there is 17th century chairs, antique chairs, and it's a mansion. And we just go there and we go in one of the rooms, like a country club. You sit down, somebody comes in and says, "What do you want to eat?" You tell them what you want, "I want to cook." They disappear, they come back with the food. And so he takes care of me. He pays all of my expenses once I get there. He's an atheist. No, he's not an atheist, but he's not a Christian. We believe this is an opportunity to take the gospel to a very beautiful place, but to people who do not know Christ. These are a beautiful park in Craiova. The largest artificial park is found in Craiova in all of Europe. It's absolutely beautiful. And here are some folks. I just took some pictures of people sitting on the park. Men just sitting in the park, passing the time, but without Christ. And yet, this is all they have. This is an Orthodox church. Gated, very few people ever go. The truth, when they get there, will not be told. And so we see this as a great opportunity to share Christ. Yes, it's to share Christ with the intellectuals, yes, but students as well. When I was leaving Craiova, as we were driving, the driver said, "Do you mind if we stop at this particular city?" It happened to be the city where Ceausescu was born. And he said, "There's a Baptist who's a leader of the Baptist churches in, I don't know, 7 or 8 counties, huge area. He wants to meet you. They want to say thank you for coming and speaking at the university and giving Baptists a sense of legitimacy in Romania." So it's not just that we go and we tell the truth. We hope to do that. It's also we go and as a Baptist, as a Christian, you say, Baptist and Christian are pretty much synonymous there, okay? So I'm not pushing Baptist. I'm just telling you Baptist and Christian are pretty synonymous. And so he just wanted to come by and see me and talk to me and say, "I want you to know how we are so grateful that you're coming here and going to the university. These folks have never been permitted in the university. If you knew you were a Christian when growing up under communism, if somebody in your family was a Christian, you were not permitted to go to the university. You were just not allowed." So, of course, nobody was trained, so you understand how people are looked at, how the Baptists were looked at. They were just looked at as, you know, people who didn't know anything and they thumped their Bible. But we're able to go and to give, I think, hopefully, a good accounting of the truth claims of Christianity in a rather unique situation. Okay, I'm pretty much past my time, but I'll take a couple of questions if somebody has one. See, I said a couple of questions if somebody has one. Yes. Yes. Yes, the question is, do I still go to the university campus and formally debate atheists? And the answer is yes. I've got 3 offers right now to do that, one in Florida, one in North Carolina, and I forget where the other one is. I don't have anything to do with it as far as putting it together. I just tell people, you find an atheist that I can debate, and I need 6 months lead time. You tell me, once you made a connection and they agreed to go, 6 months, and we can have the debate. So I'm still doing it, but it takes a tremendous amount of time. I need 6 months to prepare for a debate. And even then, I don't always do that great. But you need 6 months to prepare for it. So, yeah, I still try to do that. But it's limited.
Bruce,
yes?
Talk a little bit about, you said that financially things have changed.
Oh, yes, financially, this last trip, it cost me $200 just for transportation on the ground. When I first started going to Eastern Europe, I could have done all the traveling I did for $50 at the most. But now just everything is so much more expensive. We used to pay people to translate a document, or we call translate written translation, a document. And then we used to pay maybe $2, $1.50, $2 a page. Now we're paying $4 a page, $3 and $4 a page. People and a translator, I used to be able to get an interpreter. I used to get an interpreter. If you paid them $10 a day, I mean, that was big money. Now it's closer to $30 or $40 a day, because that's what they're actually being able to get. That's what they're being paid out in the public sector. So the expense of things has just skyrocketed over the last 4 or 5 years. The dollar has been dropping, and all the other currencies have been strengthening against the dollar. So, yeah, it's costly everywhere you go. And then, of course, flying back and forth is also costly because of jet fuel and everything. But, yes, maybe. Yes, Billy.
The Orthodox Church that you were talking about,
yeah.
Do they not hold to any of the truth at all?
Well, they would speak it, but they speak it in a mystical way. Everything in Eastern Orthodoxy is very, very mystical, and most of it is simply ritual. That is, the priests come out, and they're swinging the censer. They go in one door, they come out another door. There are doors, and up front, depending on the time of season, with the painting that tells you what season it is, they come in door, one door. So unless you really know what's going on, as you talk about preaching, well, there's not that's going on in most of these Orthodox churches at all. So it's a very mystical thing. And in under communism, the only people who ever went were the old ladies and the little, very little children. But after they got a little bit older, they weren't permitted to go to the church. So there's nobody standing up and saying, this is the way, the truth, and the life. It's extremely mystical. And not Christ and all that is not grounded in history at all for these people. So when you start talking to them about Christ and crucified and raised as a real historic event, those folks are just, what? Almost, shocking to them that we can speak of it that way. Okay? Yes.
Are the students at the university, are they receptive?
Absolutely. If I would have had a video, you would have seen, not that I'm so great, they were hanging on every word. There were probably 100, 150 students in there. And they are just writing, taking notes, and as soon as it comes question time, they're on their feet. They've heard things that they've never heard before. Not just because it's me, but because I'm speaking a message that's it's not just different, it's actually contrary to what they have been. And they have, they've heard all these, their questions come from the atheist professors. And so they bring up, well, what about this? Some of the questions I've answered this morning. And when I approach it, they don't have any response. They're thinking, yeah, well, that makes sense. And you can understand why some of the professors do not want them coming to these lectures. But they are heavily advertised. Heavily advertised. So we start to build up a reputation. And I met students this year that I met last year. They said, we want to come to your lectures this year. So the word got out. Second day I was there. Dr. Little is here from the United States. We need to go hear him. And the crowd just begins to increase. So yes, it's kind of refreshing to have students interested in asking questions. Yeah. Sorry about students. But sometimes they've got other things on their mind, like what they're going to do tomorrow.
The attitude of the professor, the theistic professor, yeah. You said he hates communism. Do you see that reflected in the students also?
No, not so. I think he'd be very careful. He would. That's not something that he would, vocalize publicly. But he is. But he's quick to criticize them. Quick to criticize. And you almost want to weep when he starts talking about their university and why it can't get where it needs to go. It's because of what's happened in the past. People have taken God out of the university. Yes, out of the universe. And so that's why he's so intent on my coming back and doing this. He's just a lovely man. I love to be around him. He's kind. He's gracious.
Feeds you well.
Feeds me well. Takes care of me. Oh, professor. No. No. We take care of that. And I honestly, I believe it's coming out of his own pocket. And his wife is a doctor. His daughter is a doctor. She's in Italy right now, in Rome. Mm-hmm. So he's very intelligent. He's history, geography, and philosophy. He's over that whole department. Well, they call it their faculty, not department. Okay, well, anyway, thank you again for your support. Thank you for praying for us. Thank you for the support. The ministry doesn't go forward without it. And I see you as, in all seriousness, I don't say it casually, as true co-laborers in what we're doing. We are the body of Christ, folks. And I get to go, but you're as much a part of the ministry, in all seriousness, I mean that, as I am. I just get to go and to do it because I've been trained, and apparently that's the God's calling on my life right now. And it kind of stuns me, to be honest with you. I'm just a farmer, and I didn't know that I was ever going to be doing these things down the road somewhere. I didn't start my education until I was 35 years old. The first time I walked on the college campus, I was 35 years old. So I've been in college and university most of my life. So I ought to be able to do something with it, okay? So I was great, glad to be able to do something. But again, I want to say, in honesty, great thanks to all of you.
He says it's just a farmer from Maine. We might need to give you all a little bit of accent training tonight. What's a booter? Yeah.